to, but the magic of MTSS is really about when you bring all the different experts to the table, the school psychologist, the counselor, the teacher that has that student, the parent, like all of that different insight, you start to form the whole picture, right? It's instead of a 2D picture of a student, you begin to have a 3D model. Welcome to Schoolin' Around, a podcast hosted by Branching Minds featuring prominent leaders, subject matter experts, and thought innovators with their perspectives on the current challenges facing K-12 education. I'm your host, Larissa Napolitan, a former teacher, instructional coach, and a member of the Branching Minds team, here to lead conversations with educational leaders and experts. My hope is to share with you not only valuable insights and knowledge from leaders in education, but have fun while doing it and shine a light on phenomenal educators and those that are on a mission to transform our schools and the lives of students.
Well, hello, hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Schooling Around podcast. If you're wondering who is this, then you're entirely correct because this is not your podcast host, Larissa Napolitan. But fear not, Larissa is here with me. Say hi, Larissa.
Hi, still here.
Still here. She has not been kicked out. My name is Melanie Gonzalez. I am from the marketing team at Branching Minds. And the reason why I'm here is because you are all celebrating the first year anniversary of this podcast.
Woohoo! 1 year. I can't believe it's really fast. Like, I feel like we just started. So it is fun.
Everyone, welcome and congratulations. You're in celebration mode right now. And we wanted to do something special for you that are listening and for this special, special podcast. So talking about things that are great and celebration, I was wondering, Larissa, I wanted to ask you before we dive into today's episode, a fun question about what is the most valuable item that you've stumbled upon recently? No, you cannot say the Schooling Around podcast. No. And then who did you tell first and why? Maybe. I don't know.
Oh, here's the deal. You share yours because while I kind of like think through the things that I found valuable.
So for me, this was literally a couple days ago. Don't laugh, but I was at a playground, obviously with my daughter, and I found a yo-yo like on the floor. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is an antique. Like, I need to grab this. And I need to, like, you know, I need to show her. So I grab the yo-yo and I go so excited to her, like, hey, look what I found. And her eyes went like wide open. So I felt the need to instruct her, you know, because her generation probably won't play or have any of those when she grows up. So I found that to be the most valuable item that reminded me of my childhood. So
I don't know. For me, I kind of think about like things I find on sale. Like, I mean, this is a very general answer, but like anytime I find something really great on sale, like I'm really quick to one text, text somebody or my sisters or whoever. I'll be like, hey, this is on sale. You should go buy it. a really amazing pair of leggings online. Like, that's the thing that popped in my head.
People actually, like, that's their career. Like, I know people that in WhatsApp, like, they create a group and they share sales with people or items and affiliate marketing that's, people. So
I was going to say, that's influencer marketing right there.
Yes.
Right? That's a whole thing.
Yes,
now.
Exactly. That's a good segue. Did I introduce myself already? I think I did.
Oh, no.
Right?
Oh, here's the deal, folks. We have a guest host today. I'm in the hot seat and Melanie is here to do the job that I usually do. So Melanie, why don't you tell everybody
a
little
newbie.
About yourself? Yeah. I feel like you should introduce yourself so that people know who you are.
I will. Guys, so if you're listening, this is not going to be smooth sail because I'm a newbie here. But I am the social media and engagement strategist for Branching Minds, but also I bring a little bit of K-12, you know, education experience because I was formerly a comms specialist at a North Carolina school district. So shout out to all of my Cabarrus County Schools teachers and educators, if you're listening. I had to throw it in there. And now I get to, if this is the first time that you're listening, then I get to introduce you to Larissa Napolitan. I feel like we all need a little bit more insight into who you are, because you always dive into, you know, the guests that come. Well, we don't get to learn a lot about you, but I do know that you were an educator for the longest mm-hmm. time. Do you care to share, please?
Well, so I am a former middle school teacher and instructional coach. And so I spent 13 years in middle schools. And so I have all my stories are really about chaos. And, but so I was a former, English teacher. And so I spent a lot of time in seventh and eighth grade. And then I was an instructional coach for 4 years. So I did a lot of coaching of new teachers, helping with school improvement, MTSS, RTI, all of that kind of stuff in schools. And so it's been really fun in this role to be able to use my experience to share other stories with educators. And I have a deep, deep appreciation for the job of the classroom teacher, of the administrator, of anybody in a building that is working so hard to help students. And so that is what I love. Part of the podcast that I love the most is talking to those educators that are on the ground doing the work and sharing their stories, because their stories should be highlighted and they should be celebrated. So yeah.
Agree. Likewise. I've met so many amazing people through the school district, and I'm just blown away about all the things that they accomplished, not just professionally, but for the students, right? So we were talking about valuable and a valuable item, and the valuable item that we are going to give you guys today is going to be some key insights for education leaders. And we're going to hop in the time capsule as well as we talk to revisit some of those amazing
nuggets. I call them nuggets, the amazing nuggets of wisdom from.
Exactly. Nuggets. That's making me hungry now. Thank you. Yes. So, Larissa, with your background and your experience, the one that you just mentioned, I really wanted to ask you, why MTSS? I know that's like such a big question, but I wanted to really know, how did you get into this and why? What was the thing that pulled you in?
I was really exposed to MTSS at a school that I worked at where, you know, and I worked in the state of Kansas, and Kansas has a big, you know, a lot of support for MTSS. And really, you know, multi-tiered system of supports. It's really about supporting all the needs of the students. And in my role at that time, I was a classroom teacher, and we really focused on, you know, the different levels of support for students. And I was in English, right? English language arts. And so really looking at what are we doing to help students in their reading and language arts, you know, at every level. And so, you know, we did a lot of work, mostly academic, but slowly over the time, we really tried to develop what are our supports social emotionally? What does that look like behaviorally? And so in that experience, I really understood that, you know, school is more than just a teacher in the classroom. Like there's more work that happens than that. And it's about like developing systems to help kids at every level. I also think I knew that as a young teacher, as a new teacher, I had the understanding that kids were more than just their assessment scores and grades. Like I recently looked back at my philosophy of teaching paper that we had to write as like a teacher in training. And that really the idea that kids come into school with like a backpack full of life experiences and their own experiences. And so I think for me, MTSS really makes a lot of sense. But like, it makes me think of a conversation. One of the first conversations we had on the podcast with Trisha Sinney, who works in Illinois at a school mm-hmm. district there. And she shared sort of about like a key insight she had about really understanding MTSS. And so I'm going to play the clip for you.
Yeah.
I knew a lot in terms of data structures and practices when it came to response to intervention, but it took me, I think the new aha was really just seeing how beyond intervention MTSS is and how impactful your preventative and proactive approaches at your core really need to be.
I think that was just like that conversation with Tricia was really important in understanding of, like, you know, progressively her district sort of worked towards being more preventative. And I think part of make MTSS being impactful is really about thinking preventatively and not reactively.
Yes. I love what you mentioned about MTSS as being not reactive, but preventative. And I think it takes time to get there, right? It gets time to kind of fix that mindset of MTSS and seeing it like that. So I do want to ask, like, based on your experience, what is the biggest benefit that you've seen, you know, of MTSS?
I think with MTSS, a big benefit is the fact that it addresses the whole child, right? Like, you know, and I was in a core class, I was a core class teacher, and I understood that, like, my students would not care about writing an essay if there was something else going on in their life or if they had another big need. And, you know, they have to be ready to learn. Like, there's a lot of science behind the fact of, like, if your brain is not ready to learn, like, it's, you know, all for nothing kind of in some ways. And so there is that idea that, like, because students, like I said, you know, come into class with all of their life experiences, you know, their home life, their personality, their own just school experiences too. Like, all of that impacts who they are as a learner. And so if I, as a teacher, disregard that or don't even, like, think about that, like, I am actually not doing my job as a teacher to think about them as a whole child. And so I really do believe that MTSS is about that. Like, we're thinking about the whole child, not just the academic portion.
So yeah, a lot of the times what I've seen is that there's a lot of focus on the academic piece of it, right? And that is a little bit, it's incomplete, right? It's incomplete mm-hmm. because we're human beings, right? And it kind of goes back to, like, putting all of those pieces of the puzzle together, right? Can you speak a little bit more on that?
I feel like that to me, I imagine that of, like, academics is the blue piece and the red piece, and you're trying to, like, put it into the puzzle, and you have to see the whole picture. Like, that's where the whole child comes in. And that, like, actually, the episode from this last week that, we put out, I had interviewed Chrissy Martin from Roanoke Rapids, North Carolina. And I loved what she had to say about that. So I'm going to play
Let's hear it. Yeah.
I just want to say that MTSS has had the greatest impact for looking at the whole child. So a lot of times we see grades and we see test scores and, okay, hey, we're going to tier the students and we're going to match them with the appropriate interventions and everything's going to be okay. But sometimes if we only look at academics, then we are missing pieces of the puzzle.
Yeah, I just think she said it perfectly. Like, mic drop, done. I don't think there's anything else I can add to that.
The puzzle is complete. Yes, yes, yes. And also, when we talk about the puzzle pieces, I've heard you say so many times to me and in the resources that you put out that it's so important to bring everyone to the table. And that's also part of that puzzle that we're talking about, right?
Yeah, I think, and that honestly, like, we'll probably just continue to talk about this, but the idea that, like, I'm going to keep using this word, and I don't mean to, but the magic of MTSS is really about when you bring all the different experts to the table, the school psychologist, the counselor, the teacher that has that student, the parent, like all of that different insight, you start to form the whole picture, right? It's instead of a 2D picture of a student, you begin to have a 3D model of what this student is really about. And that, and oftentimes those insights can maybe like illuminate an area that maybe other people have about. And so I think that, you know, there's so many different examples that were shared on the podcast this year about different, how MTSS has worked for different children or different students around the country. And I mean, it just makes me think of like when the student has been absent and they're not receiving the intervention and they're like, why are they absent? And, you know, the parent shares an insight about the kid, you know, struggling so to get valuable. Up in the morning, or like just different things that maybe a teacher in, you know, their short amount of time with a student, or even just like their, all the things that they have on a plate, they don't have the time to go do the investigation that maybe a school counselor or a social worker might be able to do. And so that's why that insight is so important.
Yeah. That really lets you see like all of the factors, right, that are contributing to XYZ. And that's so important. And I get so sad because when I hear like, oh, like our principal doesn't, like he's not in the meetings, or XY person is not there, like how can we do this? You know, we're trying to push this forward, but we don't feel like we have the support. And I'm like, dear, like, why wouldn't you want to be part of this? You know, there's like, I know your schedule is busy. I know there's so many things to do. But we're talking about pushing forward a student's future in that sense, you know. And also, and you can speak to this, the success, that feeling of accomplishment, you know, when you actually get to see the effects of MTSS in a specific student's learning journey. So please talk to me more about that, since you've been sitting on that side of the chair. Like, how does it feel? Like, when was that aha moment for you that you kind of saw that happening in real life, like for a student, and how did it impact you or the team that you were working with?
I mean, I think any teacher will tell you, right? It's the light bulb moment, right? When the kid clicks for the kid, right? But like for myself, I think about, I one year had a group of English language learners in my classroom, and I was, I made a, you know, I started to get the training to be an, you know, ESL certified. And one of the things that I started to do is to really be strategic about adding in different kinds of supports. And like, it was just like some of the class activities or worksheets really to like help define some words that I thought maybe would be needed for some of the students that needed more support for English language learning, and trying to be strategic in that and helping them. And it really made a big difference because it helped them feel more confident in the work that they were doing. Because often I found my English language learners were less likely to raise their hand and ask a question because feeling self-conscious or even just,
it's like so hard. Let me just tell you, I'm bilingual. I am originally from Puerto Rico, and it is so hard. There's so much to do with confidence, even if you have the knowledge, right? There's so many mental things involved in that transition as well. But yeah. Keep going. Sorry, well, I had to interrupt.
No. I appreciate that. But I was just thinking about how, like, in just that differentiating the learning and that, like, just, that was just tier one. But like being very clear about, you know, if there was a group of students in that class that needed more targeted support, like oftentimes I would do small groups. And so like, that's how I saw sort of the impact of doing the work to really target the support for those specific students. That work like made me feel so much more confident about helping students. We're talking about like sort of the efficacy that you feel like when students start to latch on to a piece of learning, make the progress and kind of move forward. That's huge, right? And I mean, I know on like an episode recently, Angie Waverly from Nebraska shared about like how teachers feel the effects of like when a student meets a goal or is more successful because of a targeted intervention.
Let's play it. I want to hear it.
I think that when you think about those students, it's also what those stories do to the efficacy of the teachers that worked with them. You know, once a teacher works with a student as they change their life, right? As they build a life skill, or as they achieve an academic goal that they didn't believe that they could, then the teacher builds the efficacy that if I can do it with one student, I can do it with any.
I call that reverse Uno. Like what you're doing to someone, and then it comes back, and then you're feeling it too, you know, for your own professional journey, right?
Yeah. It's like when you give to other, the gift of giving, right? Like,
No, that's true. That's true. You're completely right. Yeah. It just impacts their performance, I would say, as well. Just knowing that there's a higher purpose that's being like fulfilled, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I think that's the fulfillment. I mean, that's the reason that educators do the work that they do is because of that. And I think about how when teachers feel successful, and actually like anyone, when they feel successful in the work that they're doing, like they're more likely to want to keep doing it. And I think right now, especially, teachers need to see what their work really means, right? And I want to charge leaders of like, do you check yourself? Like, are you trying to help teachers see the work, see the manifestation of their work, like see the successes? I mean, I think that's why you celebrate those successes before, you know, you do anything else. Let's talk about what's going right. Like, what are we doing right? Where is MTSS working? Where are we really helping students? Because if you start with that, then it's like that compels you forward into moving in the process.
Well, I have a question. I mean, how many times have you sat in a room full of educators that go on and on and on and on about the problem, right? About a student. And I think we just, naturally, I guess we're humans. I think, I don't know why we're just wired to identify like problems or complain, or I feel like we're just wired. There's something scientific behind that. Called, tell me, yes.
It's called the negativity bias. And how it is actually a psychological thing where we are hardwired to detect negative things, right? And they say it's because we're naturally human beings. We're sort of supposed to be alert to threats and like negative things. But what it really really means is if we're absorbing a lot of negative information or negative experiences, we're more likely to see those things first. And so we have to work really hard to actually switch our brains to have a positivity bias, or to try to really see the positive. And we all know people that are like more natural at finding the positive, right? But I think it's fire feeds fire. You have to keep working at it to get there. And
do you know a handyman that knows how to work with that in my brain so I can like hire them?
But that's why therapists and counselors say like practice gratitude, right? We can sort of scoff at it. Oh, practice.
What are you grateful for today?
Yeah. It sounds like the things my mom would say to me as a kid, like be thankful, right? But it's really true. It's really true.
Then that's powerful in that sense, you know, because when we can move past those problems, then we can really identify like what are things that are triggering the successful piece of it, right? And I do remember a conversation with my husband, who is a math school teacher. We always, you know, you were a teacher. I bet you talk with your partner about students, how was school, etc. So anyways, he was sharing with me stories about the classroom, which never get old or boring. But he was sharing about a particular student saying he literally said, she had many insecurities, and then he stopped himself and he said, but she doesn't have any in my classroom. And then he kept going, and that simmered in me. Like, I didn't hear anything else that he said. I don't even remember what it was, but those words just stayed in my mind. And I was like, this is very deep, because we're talking about a student that other teachers complain about, right? Find disrespectful, have behavior problems with, have to write referrals for, etc. And then you have this one teacher who recognizes, you know, all of the luggage, you know, all of the things that are inside the luggage. But once this student steps into that classroom, that student has the tools that they need to do the work and to be the student that they want to be. And that to me was mind blowing. So what would you say, you know, for people that are there, like in that position, either like in the middle of feeling those negative vibes or that in their mindset, like the negativity has taken on, which we already mentioned is normal people. Okay.
Yeah.
Don't feel bad.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. I can't be, I'm not unrealistic that I know that there are a lot of different kinds of problems and challenges and obstacles that educators, schools, administrators are dealing with, right? It is a very hard job. There's a lot of hard about it. And so I think that the important thing is to like embrace the reality of like where things are at, but also to like be strategic about doing the work. And I, and honestly, I'm not saying this to the educators. I'm also saying this to the leaders, right? Like part of the job of a leader is to really set the tone and culture for the building. I mean, there's so much out there about how powerful that building leader is for the culture of the school and the work that the leader has to do to really like set the example of like looking for the strengths of a student and like talking about the student in a positive light. For me, I've always been a firm believer of like the way that you speak about the students is a reflection of what you really believe about them. And so like being very careful.
Wait,
in the
say
language...
that again, say that again. I need you to say that again.
So
again.
The way that you talk about students is a reflection of what you really believe about them. Like if you are first to spot the negative things, then you don't really believe that student has potential or that the student can't really overcome the challenges that they have in their life, right? And there's, I mean, it is possible. It is hard. Oftentimes, some students come in with a lot of things, a lot of challenges and barriers to learning and to being successful. But like when you give in to that belief, like that means that you are part of the barrier, right? Like them making you believe that that they can have possibility. And so like, and it is really hard for teachers. And I've been there. I've been burnt out and been in the position where I sort of give in to that negativity. But it didn't help me do my job better. Like it actually made it harder to go to work every day. Like, and so I do think that there is that part of the leader to set the tone and do the practices, right? Because gratitude is a practice. Like thinking positively has to do with practice because we are wired in the negativity way.
Starting with the strengths.
Starting
with the strengths of the school.
So, but it makes me think about like, so in episode 13, we talked to Trudy, our wonderful Trudy, MTSS
wonderful.
Marketing, or she's our content manager, but she was a, she's a school psychologist, restorative practices trainer, and she has such great insight about behavior. And she had something specific to say about this. I'm going to play the clip.
Let's hear it.
But I really resonate with what you said about bringing that different perspective. You know, isn't it true that often we're sitting in a meeting talking about a student and one teacher is like, that's not my experience at all. I find this student to be completely delightful. I have not seen any of these issues at all, you know, and that is such an important clue to say what's going on in that classroom compared to the rest of these classrooms. You know, so often we want to chase down where the problems are rather than chasing down where is this student succeeding and how can we multiply and build on that in other contexts. And in behavior, that's really important. Like if there is a place where that student is finding success, if you can figure that out, figure out who they're connected to and what kind of structure provides success for them, then you can often bring some of those elements into other places in the school where they're not being as successful. And so,
ooh, so good. So how do you do that? How do you multiply, you know, those successes in other classrooms, or have you had to do that before, you know, in your experience?
Well, I think in my, there's lots of different, I could give lots of different examples.
Pick one.
Well, I often think about, I had several students like this, sort of this kind of a general statement, but I had several students that like, they were an amazing artist, right? They loved art class. They loved to draw because they drew on everything, right? They drew on every paper that they handed in. And they would probably spend way more time drawing than they'd want to do any other work in class. And so seeing that, but like they also then, but you know, then I knew they struggled in English class or just even to complete assignments. And so it was really trying to sort of integrate their interests into what we were doing in class. So maybe we're designing a cartoon, or, hey, can you do the illustrations to this? Or we're learning about figurative language. And so could you draw a picture of this metaphor? What would that look like? And really trying to integrate their interests into class. But I also recognize something about art class is just that they had lots of time to work. Right? The structure of that class meant that there was a project and they didn't have anyone bother them and they could listen to music while they worked and they, you know, weren't being yelled at to take off their hoodie or to take, you know, there's things that where I had to recognize of what was it about the structure of that art class that is different than my class. You know, and they loved projects like that they could work by themselves. They just loved that. And so that's where it was like, hey, I know you have to work by yourself. So I'm just going to let you work by yourself in that. Or even, you know, and letting them feel successful at that. And then to kind of integrate that more. I mean, that's just one example of so many different.
I love it. No, yes, I see it like blending those two things, you know, things that they're struggling with the things that where they are really successful in and kind of bringing them together. So then there's this approach that's more positive and more, I guess, excited as well. It's part of it. I love it. Yes, I do remember a conversation that you had with AJ. Oh my gosh, I drooled over that episode. Let's just be honest. Crable, am I saying it right?
Yeah, AJ Crable. Yes.
That had me to pieces. Now shifting a little bit more on, we were talking about behavior and students. I just want you to play it. We can talk about it in a second. just play it because it's so good.
Is that there's an incremental amount of benefit, an incremental amount of value, an incremental amount of improvement in student outcomes that could be gained from a school system actually working, like, you know, going on all cylinders. And moreover, the children who are most harmed by that lack of that additional increment are your children who are already furthest from educational justice. You know, our children who already have the resources and supports they need, when they don't get that little added oomph out of the school system, they already have safety nets. They're going to buoy them up. They're going to be okay. It's the little AJs of our communities who, for whom public schools were the last safety net that they were relying on, that when the holes in the net are too large, that they slip through, there's nothing going to be beneath them. And so we have to weave that net as tightly as possible so they won't fall through it.
Oh,
take a second.
Oh.
There's so much to unpack on this. It's like, where do we start?
That was a fantastic conversation. There were so many nuggets out of it.
I do want to say, I do want to say that one is episode 15. If you all want to go back and listen to it, if you haven't,
it's also on YouTube.
We can't really dive into all of the things that were spoken there. But coming back to what we were talking about, you kind of mentioned the deficit based mindset, right? And then kind of turning that around towards like the strengths of the student. And that for me, I don't know why these two words come to mind when I think about deficits and then the strengths, and it's failure and success, right? Wherever we have like those deficits, the things that we're lacking usually are the things that are going to pull us towards like failing at XYZ. If we're talking about any subject, et cetera. And then wherever we have our strengths, we're probably most likely going to succeed, right? And I did wanted to note the following, because the perspective that AJ is bringing it's now looking into that whole child, right? Because now we are considering some of those deficits that a child may bring into the classroom, or things that they're lagging or they're behind on, have been really influenced by things that they cannot control. They're out of their control. Now, when you throw that curveball, right, when we're trying to think about this correct mindset, it really hits deep, right? Because we're talking about students that might come to school, but they didn't necessarily, just to give the example, like they are in poverty. I worked in a Title I school, and they're in poverty, or we're talking about students that a lot of the stories, you know, or the situation of the students that I served was, you know, like mom wasn't home. They didn't get to see mom or dad because, first of all, there was only one parent that lived with them. That's the first thing. And the second thing is that parent had two shifts, right? Two different jobs, and they didn't make it until 11 p.m. at night. And the children was already tucked into sleep by their brother or sister, or sibling, whoever it was. So there's other factors to this equation, you know, that are outside of that control. And I loved what AJ said about, for some of these students that come into your classroom, like this is their last hope, you know, mm-hmm. their last like safety net. And I feel like those words just echo so hard. Like, I just hope that school leaders that are listening to this right now are feeling the same thing. Like, it should echo inside of you, because there's an accountability and a responsibility as part mm-hmm. of the community to make sure that we are lifting all of the students, right? Not just the high achievers or the ones that, you know, have a better, I don't know. Yeah. You know, percentage of, mm-hmm. but yeah, dive in, please.
Well, I was just thinking, like, you know, when we talk about like system level impact, a lot of times with the MTSS, many administrators that I talk to are like, they're district leaders. They're people who are making decisions every day that impact kids in big ways, right? They may be a small decision about, I mean, I think one of the hardest decisions superintendents make is like a snow day, right? They're deciding on whether to call a snow day or not, right? And that decision, it could be great for some and it could be not great for others, right? But it impacts mm-hmm. people, and it's one decision they make of so many, right?
One tiny decision, right?
You know, about to call a snow day or not. And no, I don't want to call that a tiny.
No, I know it's a big decision. And trust me, parents are vocal about it, because I had to manage the comment section of those posts.
But
they'll know how they feel. Oh my gosh, yes, you know, I know. But I understand what you're saying. Like, it seems simple, right? It seems like a simple, and a lot of the times that's what I saw, Larissa, in the comment section. The way that the parents communicated was like, but why, you know, like it's so simple to not cancel, or it's so simple to cancel, but there wasn't that mindset that you're talking about.
Yeah. Well, and so I think that there is sort of that idea that the AJ is trying to sort of get across of mm-hmm. when everyone is on the same page and they're working towards the same goal and that system sort of at the system level, whether, you know, and he talks a lot about school board decisions, you know, those kind of decisions can make a big difference, right? Whether to continue an after-school program or create a tutoring thing, like some of those programs, whether to have middle school sports, that's a big deal, you know, in places that kids depend on those kind of activities to help them be excited and motivated to school, right? Go to school. And so I just think that idea of like, when we are thinking at the system level, really to be thinking like, how does this decision play out for the little AJ at school, right? How do these decisions? I'm not saying that school boards aren't thinking in that way, but sometimes he talks a lot about when you're afraid to go against the status quo, or, hey, that seems too big for us to change, or that's, you know, we're going to just keep doing what's working. And, you know, he has a charge of go take risks, do the thing that's going to help the little AJ.
Do the things that are going to change, right? That are going to actually make a change. Why not? You know? And I think that ties in very strongly with, I guess everyone experienced that in 2020, but I think we learned, one of the things that we also learned as parents with students in the school, or as a community per se as well, was we should be caring who is on the school board, because ultimately it goes down to like the decision making, you know, that's a big piece of it.
Well, and I think that's a charge to leaders to really, you know, consider having the working relationships with the school board, right? I was privileged to work with some leaders that, you know, they worked really hard maintaining positive relationships with the school board, because they knew, they did the work to help the school board members learn about what we were doing. They invited them into the schools. They involved them in a lot of ways to make them really a part of the community. And then so that way, when they went to go do a new initiative, it wasn't the first time those school board members ever saw the information, really helped them make the best informed decisions. And I just think, you know, superintendents, district level leaders can do that work. And I just saw the positive results of that. And I've always kind of admired that was kind of that's the right move, to really make sure that you are working together with your school board.
It's so simple. And this is just a perspective from the district, if anyone is listening, for school leaders, like within the school, my perspective from a district level, for us, it was as simple, and it's really not that simple, but as simple as starting to include your school board members in your invites to community events that you do at the school.
Well, and I think that kind of plays into that system level change and how that happens, you know, and how we can do the work to, you know, I mean, that honestly, that's a little bit where you're going to start to get the buy-in or like the trust of those school board members when you're inviting them into what is happening in the schools.
Buzzword. You just hit the buzzword. Buy-in. Okay. We need to talk about this buzzword. I feel like in MTSS, that is such a big word. Can you please expand?
I mean, and I don't speak to this as an expert in any way in buy-in or a leadership expert. But I think something I've learned in my conversations with different people on this podcast and just about MTSS.
Let's dissect it.
We can just dissect it. One of the things that I think it was Alan Coulter, he shared at our summit last year, maybe it was a webinar after, but he talked about the idea that, you know, it's not really about buy-in, it's about trust, right? Because buy-in is you're trying to sell someone on something, right? And so but actually you have to kind of build a relationship of trust and in that relationship move forward. And I think that there is that part of, in order to change, you really have to be in agreement, right? It's not about buy-in, but it's about being in agreement of what needs to happen. Because, right, when you talk about buy-in, it feels a little like, okay, you convinced me. Like, you know, I will go ahead and buy what you're selling on that. Okay. But you're waiting. And honestly, I think sometimes with buy-in, people who are trying to be bought into something are more likely when something goes wrong to be the first to be like, I'm out. I mean, you told me this, I bought in, but now I'm out because it's not working the way you said it would. But I think when you build that relationship, when you build that relationship of trust and agreement, I think then you're more likely to be able to move forward on that. And I think that's just building relationship 101, right? Like you have to be in agreement of what you're really working towards. Which makes
all the wheels are turning at the same time. Everyone is in the same mindset. And that makes me think of your recent interview with Sima.
Sima.
Okay. I think we need to go back to that. We need to hear that.
Let me play the clip that I'm thinking about.
And a lot of people really try to jump really quickly into solutions. And part of why I think strategic planning and planning and change is so difficult is that solutions come much further down the line. It's so much more in the beginning about understanding what our current state is, identifying a problem, investigating a root cause, designing and defining what the future state's going to be. What is that that we are all going to be shooting our arrows towards? And then once we identify that as an entire group, we have buy-in on all of those levels, that's when we can start figuring out, okay, where are we at today? Where do we want to go? What's that gap and how do we close it?
I love it. Understanding. Like, the understanding is what's going to bring everyone together to know where we're headed and how we're going to get there, right? And also, I feel like that piece of, I think Alan touched on this as well, the piece of accountability. Once you have that understanding, there's a natural accountability that's going to fall on you, like, oh, like, this is what we should be doing. This is how it should be done. This is the best way to do it, right? So I think that's very powerful. And I feel like a lot of the conversations that I've heard in the communities, in MTSS communities, is getting stuck at this point of the process of buy-in, of like, not everyone is on board. And I feel like that can be challenging and a little bit frustrating. Was there anything specific, like, that you could recommend, like, from your own experience of, like, trying to drive, you know, this new initiative that can help with creating that understanding for everyone? Like, how does it play out in the real life? It looks beautiful. Mm. It sounds beautiful. Yes, everyone. But how do you do that? You know?
Well, I mean, okay. Number one, like, I'm going to say that I'm just speaking from my experience, and because this is just a reflection of what, the different kind of leaders I've worked for. And I think that there's a difference between the leader that really does the work to build relationship and build trust with their staff and working, like, deciding together how you're moving forward and, like, what that would look like, then the leader that is going to come in and push whatever they think is best and without doing the work to build the relationship first. And I think no matter the size of the district, a leader that brings all the stakeholders and really works hard to build that relationship in an authentic way and lets their kind of ego get out of the way. It's not about them and their great idea, but about the school working together towards improvement. I think they get a lot further in with the buy-in or with that agreement than the leader who's just going to try to push their own initiative forward, right? Because you could come into a school and go, I'm going to improve the school, but you can't do it alone. Like, you gotta have a lot of other people on board. And so you have to do the work to really, like, do it together. And I think setting that ego aside, and I don't think I think myself as serving in different leadership capacities, I wish I'd had more sort of training and understanding of that earlier in my career. Just really understanding how to move things forward. It isn't about just having, here's all the evidence, here's the reason why we're going to do this thing, and then think that's going to convince people. But it's, well, you got to tell me why I'm jumping on board here. I don't really know if I can trust that you're, you know, going to start moving us forward and ask me to do stuff, you know? So yeah. I think that to me, in my experience, I just think that there's no greater fire for that change or that whatever, that agreement, than building trust and building relationship with the people you need along the way.
So talking on that sense of, like, buy-in, which is a big, big task to, like, implement something new at a school, let alone, like, a district, right? Let's shift it specifically to MTSS. There's this thought, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but that MTSS might be the thing that fixes education. It's supposed to be the thing that fixes education. I implement it and then we're done. Can you debunk this, or can you help us understand
better? Well,
Why are you laughing?
I'm laughing because it is such a thing to say. I mean, it's just a buzzword of,
yeah,
you know, a lot of teachers are like, oh, MTSS is just this with a different name, or this is just another thing that it will go away in a few years. Like, there's always, and I just think there's a mindset of there's going to be new
mindsets. Yeah.
Yeah. There's going to be new things. Well, but there's going to be new things all the time because like more research comes out or whatever, like kind of like the newest iPhone, like there's always going to be something new that we can like a new insight. And there are things about education that are tried and true, right? But what I absolutely love this quote from ERB that we did, I think it was episode 11. And she talked about MTSS being magical. And so I'm going to play it because I want to discuss it.
I think MTSS is magical. I don't think it's the magic bullet because we still need to put a lot of systems processes in place to make it work. But that's where technology is supposed to come in, right? Especially when we think about education technology, and it can do so many things, but like, what are the most appropriate roles for tech? And I do think it's in helping pull those systems together. That's a core belief of mine. And so that just aligns perfectly with what we're trying to do here at Branching Minds.
I think that quote just about how MTSS is magical and not the magic bullet is really key, because like if MTSS is if it's implemented with fidelity, right? If you are having all the stakeholders at the table, if you are sort of like, you know, 5 years into implementation, if you're fully implementing MTSS to this full capacity, it can be magical to see the impact of that. But you have to have that patience to get there, right? There has to be a level of like, we're going to do what we can.
Patience in education? Wait, what? Who are you talking
so
to?
I say that with the mindset that there is students have urgent needs, right? I have that, we have to continue to move forward. And so the idea, there's only so much educators control. There's only so much that leaders can control. We deal under the thing of policy and all of that stuff. And so, but that idea that when we're moving forward to using MTSS in its full capacity, more and more magic can happen, right? It's magical, but it's not going to be the thing that is like fixes things immediately, right? Because we're still human beings.
It's not a one and done. Yeah.
And I have to say this because I think ERB says this in her quote, just the idea that when you pair that with technology, that is even more powerful because MTSS itself is very cumbersome, very cumbersome. There's schools all over the country that are doing it with red and green folders and passing things along and using spreadsheets and all this different stuff. And so you need technology to get there, right? And there is technology out there that can help. And I think that there is a magic in leveraging the power of technology and leveraging the power of MTSS at the same time.
But also bringing the reality, I feel like there's this perspective in like specifically like district of adopting a technology and thinking that it's going to be a one and done. Like, yeah, it's kind of the same thing, but now with the technology piece, once we adopt this, all of our problems are going to be solved and that's all. But truly, that's when the work begins. Like, you need to put in the work, you need to build your foundation strong, right? Just to make sure that the system is working to its full capacity. But there's a lot of teamwork and communication that is involved in this process, you know, within the school and then also from the district, you know. So no magic bullet, but definitely magical for sure.
I think that there has to be a consideration of how can we make the job of the classroom educator, of the school leader, how can we make it just a little bit easier, right? In the day and age that we have, there is this sense that we can't ignore that technology can be an aid to us doing our jobs at a higher capacity and taking away some of those time-consuming, cumbersome tasks the teachers may spend hours doing, and it takes away from that valuable instruction time that teachers have, right? Teachers only have so much time with students. Like that time should be maximized in the best way possible. Like the hardest thing for me as an educator was when I lost so many different instructional days to assessments or to different things that I just felt like I'm losing time with my students. Like I need time with them in order to make the progress that I need to make.
And you lose your passion when you feel that all of you do is this thing that is so cumbersome and it takes so long and it pulls you away from the things that you actually love about your job. Like you start getting burned, right? Thank you, Larissa. I feel like we've gathered so many key insights, especially for education leaders, decision makers, and anyone really that's truly involved in the MTSS process framework on a daily basis. And I did wanted to, before we go, I wanted to ask you, because let's go back to the beginning. It's our
This is a group effort here.
I know. It's our first year anniversary for the Schooling Around podcast. And I'm pretty sure that you have so many more great things to come. So can you please give your listeners just a little peek into what's coming up in the new year?
Well, to sort of wrap up this year, we're going to do some mini episodes in December. So be on the lookout. I know that December is a busy month, so we got some short episodes coming for you. And then season two, we're going to like wrap up season one and we're going to start a season two in January. And we're going to talk about some of those topics that people bring up all the time, like secondary MTSS. That is a huge topic that people ask about all the time. Mm-hmm. We're going to kind of dive into like adult learning theory when it comes to professional development and things like that. So we're really going to try to focus on just some of those topics and finding experts to talk about those, to find educators. And we're going to continue to tell the stories of people doing the work on the ground, because I think those are so valuable, because it's so important to look to figure out what MTSS looks like in different contexts, because no school is the same, no district is the same. And so it all kind of like it's still the same kind of framework and philosophy, but it is can look very different in different places. So that's kind of what we're looking forward to.
I love it. And I need to thank you for sharing your story today with all of us. And I hope to see everyone. Well, actually, not me, but you. Larissa hopes to see all of you back here for the next episode.
And Melanie, we'll be glad to have you back anytime. So.
Aw, thank you. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. This is fun.
Yes. Bye, everyone.
Thanks for listening to Schoolin' Around, a podcast hosted by Branching Minds. And don't forget to subscribe to this podcast to hear all our future episodes. As well, if you're enjoying our content, would you do us a favor and rate and review our podcast on iTunes? This helps others find our podcast and let us know how much you love what we're creating. Branching Minds is an educational technology company using learning sciences and technology to help districts effectively personalize learning through MTSS. To learn more about us, check out our website, branchingminds.com, or follow us on Twitter, Facebook, or LinkedIn @branchingminds.